Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Denny Somach, and this is The Rock Podcast. And on this episode, it's a conversation with John Anderson. He's currently on tour, playing a lot of the classic Yes songs and other material from his life's work. I have to tell you that I've known John for almost 50 years, so we get into a lot of great stories, and I think there's quite a few things that you may not have heard from him. So I hope you'll enjoy listening to this as much as I had doing it. So here's my conversation with the legendary John Anderson. So I got to catch up. I got to catch up because I know you're working on several things. You're working on Elias too, right? Also?
Yeah. Yep.
And you got this and you're going out on the road. So where do you want to start?
Well, I 40 some years ago, I met Marc Chagall.
Right. I remember that.
On his 90th birthday. And I wrote a musical about him. And I remember him telling me this. He said, musicals take time. And I thought, I'll get it done next year. 40 years later, we had a session, a testing of the music and the performance in San Francisco a month ago, like an abbreviated version. And now we're thinking of, oh, fingers crossed, to be able to go and perform it in a dome in Las Vegas.
Oh, okay.
That's the future of my life, you know. I've only got four other musicals lined up.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. What's the is there a timeline? Is one have preference over the other?
No, it'll happen when it happens. Is my favorite saying.
I know you.
And here I am. In 2 weeks, going on tour with the Band Geeks.
Right. Now, when does the tour start?
In 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks. And where is it? Where are you starting? In Florida again or somewhere?
No. We're starting in our first show, I think, is either New Jersey Pike or the Palladium in Times Square.
Oh, well, New Jersey's going to go crazy because, you know, the huge Yes goes back for years in that area of the country. Philadelphia, Jersey, that's one of your strongest points. So who's in the band this time?
Well, the band is called the Band Geeks. You can actually Google them, and they're, you know, Richie's the bass player.
Right.
And there's Andy and Ed and Andy. I can't remember the names. But we've been working, Zooming each other for the last month.
Right.
Every Tuesday, basically going through all the songs we're going to do. And now I've got them all lined up on my computer, and I come in every day and sing them all. And it's fun because I've got a list of them here. Do you want to see the list?
Sure, absolutely.
Here's the list. Yours is No Disgrace, Perpetual Change, Close to the Edge, All Good People, Heart of the Sunrise, Awaken, Starship Troopers, and so on.
You know, I noticed there's three songs there from the Yes album right away. Is that your favorite album?
Well, the best time of my life musically and group-wise was in the 70s.
Right.
You know, it's just the way it was at that time. You were there.
Yeah.
You were there with our good friend Lee Abrams and a couple
Correct.
Of other friends. And our sort of vision grew. Lititz, Pennsylvania is where we used to go and rehearse, you know.
In Lititz.
Claire Brothers, you know.
Lititz, sure.
And then, you know, we just got married to Philadelphia and sort of performing there, and then eventually doing sort of In the Round. I remember doing In the Round there.
Yeah, right.
And traveling the world by then. And that was the most exciting experience from a group point of view because, you know, in the 70s, it was just magical, musically speaking. And we just wondered where we were going to go next. And I remember I was on tour with, we were doing Fragile tour.
Right.
And basically, I was listening to Sibelius quite a lot then. And there was one day that really stuck out for me because, you know, I'd be smoking a joint and listening to Sibelius, relaxing, then do a show, you know, get ready and go, you know. But this day, I kept listening to this one piece. It was the Seventh Symphony. And I couldn't believe that it was all in one piece. Like, usually, all symphonies that I knew were in three movements, you know?
Right.
But this was 27 minutes long, 26 minutes, 27 minutes long. And it flew by. It sort of, there it was, the end. Oh, my gosh. And I was mesmerized. So I must have played it 10 times that day. And I thought, that's what we've got to do now. Because at that time, Heart of the Sunrise, Starship Trooper, these were all 7-8 minute long pieces on the record.
Right.
You couldn't get them played on the radio, except as we traveled around all the universities, they had FM radio in those days. And they would play the long pieces. And we just sit there and think, they're pretty good because they're fun to play on stage, but there's something about them, you know, let's do a long form piece. And mm-hmm. I got together with Steve and then Chris, and, you know, Rick Wakeman was in the band then and Bill, and we did Close to the Edge. And it was like, to me, it was like, you know, I started off doing Everly Brothers songs. With my brother, you know.
And it Everly was, Brothers, Association, Fifth Dimension.
Association, of course, you know. Three songs from the guy who wrote MacArthur Park, Jimmy Webb.
Yeah, Jimmy Webb, right.
And we used to go on stage and do songs from Fifth Dimension album. This was right at the beginning of the Yes, you know.
Right, yeah.
And by the time we were playing concerts at the Forum, is it the Spectrum, sorry,
Spectrum, yeah.
In Philadelphia, I always remember doing Close to the Edge for the first time, because it was like, the audience was so quiet, you know?
I was there, yeah.
It's so quiet, you could hear a pin drop, you know?
Yeah, really.
And then, so in some ways, that music, now that I'm re-singing it, I'm thinking, boy, oh boy, the lyrics.
I hate to ask you this, but do you have a cheat sheet occasionally you have to look at the lyrics or no?
Yeah, I've got a little monitor there, you know. Of course, you know, I'm 80 years old next year, so I work on the principle of when it's my birthday, I'm always in my next year.
Right.
So now I'm in 79.
Right.
So I'm in my 79th year. So after October this year, I'll be in my 80th year. Hey, and I feel damn good about it.
So I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I'm in Florida. I live in Florida. In fact, just by coincidence, tomorrow night down here, Rick Wakeman is doing his solo show. Just by coincidence. I thought I'd let you know.
He never stops.
Never stops. Never stops at all. So I want to ask you, because, you know, most people know you live in Southern California.
Central
California.
Well, but, you know, halfway between LA and San Francisco, right in the middle.
Right. With the lovely Jane.
Beautiful Jane. God bless her.
And how's she doing? Everybody would want
Amazing.
Me to ask.
Just okay. Beautiful as ever.
Okay, good. Now, are there still some places, I know you're going to be playing all over the US, and I don't know what your plans are for overseas, but are there still places around the world or even in the States that you haven't played?
You know, I can't remember. More or less, we've played almost everywhere you can play in the world, even Thailand. I did that with, what's he called, the Japanese keyboard player. I'll remember his name in a minute. Shostakovich.
Yeah, okay.
No. Kitaro.
Kitaro, right.
Kitaro-san. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, we played almost, not everywhere, of course, but I think my feeling is that we're going to be doing this tour.
Right.
And, you know, tickets are doing great. People are very interested and excited to hear the classics and the epics.
Yeah.
Because I wondered, would ever a record company put out an album of just the epics? That'd be like six, you know, you got six, you got your Gates of Delirium, you right. and so on and so on. And I've got to take, I'm going to take this. It's called Singer's Saving Grace. And it surely is.
And of course, we have to remind everybody that in the bicentennial year, you played in front of 100,000 plus in Philadelphia, which was still one of the high points, right?
Yeah, I've got a picture of it up there on the wall. It's true.
What do you remember about that day?
I remember it so vividly because what's the guy called? I want you show me the way.
Peter Frampton, who was your opener. Opening
God bless him. Yeah, he was already a big record, you know.
Right.
So all these people, and he went on stage. He did a great show and everything, and we go on stage and we start. I think we were going to do Gates of Delirium in front of 100,000 people. You think, I hope they're going to like this. But what we had, the interesting thing that we had laser beams. You know, we're on tour for the first time with really big laser beams, you know.
Right.
So we thought, well, when it goes dark, the audience are going to love this, you know. And, you know, I'll tell you something. I shouldn't say this, but I will.
John, you can say anything you want with me. And if you change your mind, I'll take it out. But I don't think I'll have to do that.
There was a fire guy around backstage, a fire prevention guy, you know, serious guy, said, you can't use your laser beams. And we said, why? He said, well, if you're going to project them out there, that's where the planes come into the airport.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, don't tell anybody. So we had laser beams that night. The show must go on, you know.
That was just a magical day because it was a whole day thing. Gary Wright, I think, was on the bill.
Yeah.
It was just a magical day.
It was. It was.
That whole thing. So.
Oh, my gosh. And it got very cold and somebody set fire to the blinkers.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I don't remember that one. But, you know, I was doing
a few
there.
Yeah. Okay, it's okay. It was a great day, though.
Yeah. Okay. So
it was a great day for the Irish.
Yeah. I got to ask you something else. It's a little bit of a detour, but because I'm working on it, this year is the 75th anniversary of Atlantic Records, and they've asked me to do some interviews, et cetera. And you're one of the longest running bands on Atlantic and one of the major, you and Zeppelin, you know, were the major rock bands. You have any good Atlantic stories or Ahmet Erdogan stories?
My favorite one, which I think I've told a few times, but it's still funny. We were in London. We'd done some touring in England. We hadn't really stretched our touring into Europe or anything, just playing in London and Manchester and Glasgow and things like that. And Ahmet Erdogan wanted to hear us. And our manager at the time was called Roy. And he was the sweetest guy. And he enjoyed a drink now and again. Lovely guy. And so we were there at 1 o'clock to do a little session, and we did three songs for Ahmet Erdogan. And Ahmet came in and he looked, of course, he looked like a millionaire. He was
right.
Brilliant. He always dressed immaculately, you know. And so we did our three songs, and I wanted to go to the loo, so I went to the loo. And then Roy came in behind me, and he came next to me standing there, and I'm having a pee. And he says, I'll tell you what we're going to do. This guy from New York is going to pay through the nose. I'm going to make so much money for you, and I'll make sure you get a great contract, so don't worry. And I'm saying, okay, Roy, no problem. And all of a sudden, the chain rings next to us in where the toilets are, and out comes Ahmet Erdogan. So we heard the whole thing.
Great.
And he signed us for 10 years.
He was a character, wasn't he?
He he was like a father figure to me. You know, I bumped into him was in Seattle. Well, it wasn't long before he passed on to the next world. And I always thought of him like a father figure. And it was, he said to me, I think it was after he heard Close to the Edge, and he just said, John, don't change what you're doing. I said, okay, thank you. Because you always wonder what a record company wants you to do next. You know, there wasn't a single on it. You know, there were just three songs. And we survived. You know, we survived that treacherous time of disco and punk and, you know, funkadelic and all that kind of music. And that we survived all the way through.
Yeah. I will tell you that I think one of the, and I don't know if I told you this before, so if I did, forgive me for repeating it, but years ago when I interviewed Amit, when I was working on one of the Yes radio specials that we did, I asked him what he liked most about Yes. And he said, I love going to see them because I can see them three nights in a row, because every night it's like an artist with a painting and the palette, it's going to be different every night. And I thought, that's brilliant.
That's good.
That's a good one.
We haven't changed.
No, not at all.
No, not at all.
So obviously you're seeing fans from the beginning and new fans coming to the shows.
Yeah.
And you're pretty open guy. I mean, I know you go out there, you talk to them after the shows sometimes. What are some of the things that the younger Yes fans ask you about?
Well, the interesting thing is I'm going out on tour in the summer with the teenagers, the Academy of Rock.
Right.
Paul Green, who invented the School of Rock.
School of Rock, right.
And I get that from those young, talented, very talented musicians, a feeling that what I did in the 70s and 80s and whatever, it spills into their consciousness very easily. It's like... I remember the first time I saw the School of Rock, this is 20 some years ago,
right.
I was in Philadelphia, the Spectrum, backstage, and all these kids had the School of Rock t-shirts. I'm repeating myself, I know, but there was Paul Green, and he said, would you like to come and work with the kids in Philadelphia now, you know, next month or something? I said, no, I don't think so. Thank you. The kids, you know, I don't want to deal with that, you know. And about 2 weeks later, Paul Green, bless him, he sent me a cassette of them playing Heart of the Sunrise. And I freaked out. And then he said, look, we're going to be in L.A. in 2 weeks to promote our movie that they created, a sort of a documentary about School of Rock. Would you mind getting up and singing with the band? I said, yeah, I'll do it. And I did. And from then on, I was sort of locked into the idea of working with young musicians is magical, because they're just growing. They're just coming through their state of consciousness from 14 years old, 15, 16 years old. And they've got the talent, you know. And in a way, the answer to your question is that I think young people will come to see our show with the kids.
Right.
And then they'll probably come to see the Band Geeks and see what they're going to do, you know, because we're going to do Close to the Edge, and we're going to do Starship Trooper. Let me look. What's the other one? Oh, I've got it here. Ritual.
Ritual, yeah.
Which I love. I love the song of that. It's a very powerful idea, you know. Woo!
Yeah. What are you doing from 90125? You doing Owner of a Lonely Heart?
Rhythm of Love, to the Rhythm of Love.
Yeah.
Because I know the chords. So yeah. I'm going to play the guitar and do my Elvis Presley impersonation.
Yeah. And what are some of the other favorites?
No, we'll do Owner.
Owner of a Lonely Heart.
I think, you know, the audience want to, you know, there's going to be a lot of, not a lot, but there's going to be some people who heard Owner of a Lonely Heart and bought the album, and then figured out, hey, look what they did in the 70s. I want to go and buy that album.
Right.
And they love it, and so on. You have that cross collateration of wrong word, that is collateration. Cross pollination.
Pollination, yeah.
Or something like that. Anyway, I'm rambling away now.
That's okay. So what do you make of this whole thing going on with this revival in vinyl records? Because people are now going to get vinyl albums, and they're reissuing them.
It's a good thing. You know, I've got a vinyl record player here, and sometimes I'll put it on. The tone is so unique. The quality of sound is so unique, especially the records of Yes and bands in the 70s just used to make great sounding albums and songs, and you know, the Beach Boys and obviously the Beatles was our forerunner to where we went, because they were so adventurous with music, and thank God they had George Martin, you know, the most brilliant guy in the world musically. And it's good to have the vinyl situation. Now they just post it, an album, you just download it.
Right.
It hasn't, but that's why I've just done this project. The Zamran Son of Elias is a visual experience, and you know, it's and actually I've just done some surround sound mixes of Opus, which I'm very, very excited about, because surround sound is what we hear all day long. You know, we hear birds over there, and you hear the cars driving down the road over there, and you hear the wind coming here and there, and not stereo, it's surround. Yeah. And I think that's going to become the norm. It has in a lot of houses. They have a surround sound for the TV shows they watch and stuff, so they'll be able to watch and hear my new work.
Now, I think I saw it on YouTube. There was somebody that did a complete cover of Elias. Have you seen that?
A cover? How do you mean a cover?
They did the whole album.
The whole album. Yeah, that's my friend Mickey Byrne.
Oh, okay. So you know about it then.
He does my videos.
Okay.
He lives in Ireland, Northern Ireland. He's just a brilliant visionary. And I can't wait to be able to work in 3D with him. Because 3D will come, so you don't have to wear glasses. 3D will be a natural thing, just like Technicolor is, you know.
Right. Do you ever think about doing any of the stuff that you did with Vangelis?
Yes, as it happens. When Vangelis passed away, I was laughing all day long. My wife thought I'd gone crazy. And I said, no, we always had so much fun, because he was hilarious. He was like, I don't know, there's something about his humor being Greek or whatever. It was very much like Laurel and Hardy, me and him.
Right.
Because he would. So I just spent the day laughing and remembering such great moments that we had together. Because musically, we were far and away from Yes music or any music of that kind.
Yeah.
Band music. It was just him and a keyboard and all these incredible sounds, and he had magical fingers, magical I don't know what it was. Every day I'd go over to his studio, and 2 hours later we'd written three songs, you know. It's like, oh, okay, I'll see you next week then, and we're going to go out lunch, have some lunch, a little bit of ouzo, and then write some more. And one of my favorite pieces is Friends of Mr. Cairo.
Right.
Because it's
great album. It's great album.
It's a great piece of music. The structure of it that was created within the 2 hour period that we wrote the song, he would just start playing and I would sing, and then he'd stop and he'd start playing something else, and then I'd sing something else, and then he'd play, and I'd say, this is sound. I'm singing about old time gangster movies. You know, like the Maltese Falcon. Can you play some sort of da da da? You know, so, and just do it. Oh yeah, I can do that. And then at the end, I said, can you play like you were looking up at the big screen and you fell in love with the whatever her name was, you know, on the screen. And that was the ending of the song. And he did that beautiful piano-y, as though he was. The piano player at the when there was no sound, it was just a black and white movie, and he was playing the piano, like in the style of the early 19th century.
Well, I've won a few trivia contests because there are people that believe State of Independence was written by Donna Summer.
Oh, good. No, she was lovely. There's a great story there, you know.
Please.
There's a great story, and it was Lee Abrams who got the album Friends of Mr. Cairo.
Yeah, right.
And he sent it to Quincy Jones, who was actually recording Donna Summers. Mm-hmm. And so Quincy got this album and to do State of Independence because he'd heard it on the radio somehow.
Right.
And so the interesting thing behind that was that he decided to get together all the top singers to sing on that song. So if you Google Michael Jackson, State of Independence, you'll see a video of all these incredible people, Lionel Richie, all these amazing singers, Diana Ross, it was amazing because it was like Stevie Wonder. It was like a dozen of the greatest singers in the world were singing on that song. And I felt so blessed. Thank you. Thank you. Whoever organized that. And then that night when they finished the recording, Lionel and Michael got together and they wrote We Are the World.
Right. That's right. Yeah. They recorded that in L.A.
Can you imagine the whole idea of State of Independence and then We Are the World? You know, it's like all in the same day. So
yeah,
I feel very, very, very grateful and thankful for that. Very proud.
So what do you think about other people from your generation still out there, still giving great shows? Because I asked this question of Ian Anderson. And I said, I know this is not going to be yours, but I said, so how long do you think you're going to play? And he goes, well, I got to tell you, when I was coming up, all my heroes were the old blues guys and they were in their 70s and 80s. So
yeah.
I don't see any reason to quit.
Same here.
I mean, they're still making amazing music, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Some of your best music is coming. You know, I don't think, I'm going to go in the studio and write a really bad song. I always think I'm writing my next whatever that is,
So have in the past couple of years, I don't know how often you go to shows, but have you had a chance to see like a McCartney or a Roger Waters or any of the other contemporaries in concert?
No, I've just seen short videos of these guys, incredible in front of thousands upon thousands of people. Of course, Paul McCartney's, and he was always a god to me anyway.
So. Right.
And John and George and Ringo.
Yeah. I always wanted to ask you, did you ever meet McCartney?
Oh,
Sounds like a story's coming.
No, it's interesting that Yes was doing a show in London, and it was at a theater in Earl's Court. I can't remember the name of it.
Right.
The Empire, something like that. And we'd done the show, and audience was great, everything was great. And I'm backstage. There was two floors to get up to your dressing room.
Right.
And I was looking for probably a joint or something or a drink after the show.
Right.
And I'm walking up the steps, and Paul McCartney's walking down, and he goes like, and I went, Paul McCartney. I couldn't believe it. I think he shook my hand, or maybe he didn't.
Okay.
But it didn't matter. It was Paul McCartney.
So it was still a thrill, right?
God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. God. And I remember meeting George Martin in the BBC building in London.
Right.
I met him three times in the elevator.
Did you say hi to him?
Yeah, but I went in the first time, and about 2 months later I went in the elevator again. I was doing some radio show or something, and he was there again. I said, George, do you live here? he didn't get it at the time. So
did you Did you either solo or with Yes, I don't think I've ever asked you this, ever record at Abbey Road?
Yes, I did. And that's another story because I was very annoyed.
You were annoyed? What were you annoyed about? That the Beatles weren't there or what?
No, the guy, you know, the producer and one of the guys.
You can tell the story. That's okay.
No.
You don't want to tell the story.
Well, I will. One second. I'm getting hot and then cold.
Okay, no problem.
The producer of the record was messing around with the drum machine. And I walked in, wandering in about midday, you know, and there was Alan White sitting there with Tony Kaye.
Right.
And they're having coffee. Hey there. And I go in, and the producer and Chris, bless him, are playing around with this drum machine, trying to get a groove going, you know?
Right.
Whatever, you know.
The reason I'm asking you is there's a new documentary out that Mary McCartney did called If These Walls Could Sing. And it's the story of Abbey Road. I just saw it recently, so that's why I was asking you.
Well, this was in the producer's studio. And an hour later, they're still messing around. 2 hours later, I leave and say, I'll see you tomorrow. And I look over and I said, they got the best drum in the world here, and they're messing around with a drum machine. So I went the following day, and the same thing was happening. It was kind of bizarre to me. And I got very uptight and angry with everybody. I said, look, I've just phoned up Abbey Road round the corner, which was in the corner of Oxford Circus, where the
St. John's Wood.
Right? Yeah, they had a no, it wasn't in St. John's Wood.
Okay.
They had a beautiful studio just there. And I went in and said, I don't care what you think of me. I've booked the studio on Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. Let's be there and do this effing song, okay?
Right. Okay.
And then crept out.
Yeah, you snuck out. Okay. So people.
Oh.
So
and some it was of a big record. It was a big record.
So some of the people ask me stuff to ask you because they know I know you. And you, what's a typical day for John Anderson? I know, you know, you get up in the morning. What happens?
Well, you wake up. You know, we have a beautiful garden and then a little place for the birds to come. So I go out and feed the birds. And then I make breakfast. We always like breakfast in bed, watching the crazy news, you know. And then I'll go out and work out a little bit. And then I go for a nice long walk around here. It's beautiful. Yeah. And I've been listening to Rachmaninoff's third piano concerto and every day for like 3 months now.
Right.
And it's just a dream. You see, you're listening, and you don't realize you're walking up this hill and down this hill and up this for about an hour. And then I'll come and, get ready and come into my, this is my studio that I'm in now,
right,
which is our cottage, and start working on ideas that I started 10 years ago and 12 years ago. And I'm still trying to finish a lot of stuff.
I know, so you've always got several things going at once.
Yeah, this past couple of years has been really, COVID and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we were told to stay indoors, you know, COVID is here, right, and everything like that. Well, I was fixing my barbecue and I tripped up and broke my foot, so I couldn't do anything. I was walking around like this, terrible, for about 6 months. And so I got on with some music, and I just had this idea of doing some music and visualization of music, and of course then the idea of doing Zamran, son of Elias, because my son 10 years ago, you know, he came in the studio and said, Dad, why don't you do Son of Elias, all right? And I said, okay. That's interesting. Should I do that? He said, yes, Dad, as my son would say. And God bless him. I started working on it right then. That was 10 years ago or so.
Right.
And now and again, I'll do something and stick it together. And then I have books of all the lyrics that I was going to sing and write and everything. And it's an endless procession of events that by the time you get into finishing, I wonder, because I thought about the word Zamran the same day for some
right.
reason.
Right.
And I had no idea what it meant. And about last middle of last year, I was working on some music for it. And then I said, okay, I'll Google it. So I Googled Zamran. It's very interesting what Zamran means. It's a Middle Eastern word for the center of all things in relativity, consciousness thinking.
Right.
Center of all things is Zamran. And we are all the center of all things. Our little selves, because we are everyone, you see, there, Denny.
Yeah.
We are everyone.
Right.
And we are collectively yeah. around the world, everyone. And, you know, strange as it may seem, a lot of people are starting to understand that as well.
Mm.
And we okay. will grow, and our state of consciousness will wake us up a little bit more to the reality of who we truly are and why we're here and so on and so on.
So I know that people, and I know you've responded, people send you stuff all the time. And sometimes you, how did you get involved with that cover of A Day in the Life that Hawaiian guy did? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Very sweet guy. Gosh, his yeah. name will come in a minute. He's a miracle. Ukulele player,
right?
That's it, yeah. Ridiculously good.
How did he get? How did you? I mean, how did that happen?
A friend of mine who's a PR guy, Michael. You probably know him, Michael
yeah.
Jensen.
Yeah.
He called me and said, "This wonderful guy that you like is making an album with a load of famous people, and he would like to do a song with you." So I said, "Well, that's kind of strange because when I did my solo tour, I'd always play A Day in the Life on ukulele."
Right.
Sounds like George Formby. People don't know who George Formby is, but I read the news today, oh boy, the English army had just won the war. So I sent him a recording of me doing it, and then he did his version. I sang it, and job was done. We should remember his name, gosh.
Yeah, that's all right. Are there other things like that you've done over the years that stand out?
Yeah, I sang for who's the guy who ran the Beach Boys? What's his name?
Brian Wilson.
Who?
Brian Wilson.
Brian Wilson. Yeah, it is Brian. I think it was Brian.
Yeah, Brian.
It was
Wilson.
His birthday.
Yeah.
So I sang a lovely version of.
Was it God Only Knows?
Vibrations.
Oh,
God
Good
Only
Vibrations.
Knows, yeah.
God Only Knows, yeah.
Yeah. I do that. I just kind of say, yeah, okay, I'll sing that. Yeah, that's okay. That's about it.
All right, somebody wanted me to ask you, what's going on with your artwork? Are you still doing it, and is it available anywhere?
No, it's not available, really. I've got lots of it everywhere in the next room, which is where we paint, where Jane's an artist as well, a sculpture lady. But, you know, I'm always, I have one here a minute ago. It's disappeared.
Okay, well, but it's not show and tell. You don't have to show, just tell.
No. It's just something that I would do. I'll probably do more in the next 10 years.
Right.
When I'm old and gray. I'm getting very gray now. So
we need to have an exhibition of your work, because I mean, I've seen a lot of it, and the watercolors.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. There's lots of it. There's little bits here, little sketches here, that, you know. But then you look at what some people get up to doing incredible art.
Right.
Unbelievable art. Mine's just watercolors and just having fun, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So When you go away somewhere on vacation, because you've been everywhere, where do you and Jane go?
We love Hawaii. Yeah. We have a place, a friend of ours has a place, and we go and stay there in Maui and sometimes in Kauai. They've had a lot of problems with the weather at the times where the river overflows and everything into the sea. So we have brown water rather than blue.
Right.
It's all the rubbish from the mountains coming out, and, you know. It's interesting, you know, this new thing that's happened now, the 5,000 miles of sludge is coming over.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like the ocean saying, we're sick and tired of you giving all us plastic, so we're going to give you some seaweed that really smells terrible. So you suckers, that's the ocean talking. You know?
Right, right. Wow, that's great. Okay. All right. Well, I know you got so many things going on here, and we can't wait to see you live. So the tour starts in a few weeks.
2 weeks, two and a half weeks, yeah.
How long is it?
I can't remember, to be honest.
Have you started rehearsals yet?
Yeah, we've been doing rehearsals via Zoom, which is very, very exciting for me because everything was in time. You know, we have Richie, the bass player, who's the Castellano, I can't remember, can't really say his name properly,
right.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But Richie, the bass player, he organized everything, and it was in time. I was singing in time with the band, and so he just sent me the recordings, and I've got them all lined up now, and after we spoke, and I will spend the next 2 hours singing the whole, all the songs, and remembering the words.
John Anderson uses a cheat sheet, but that's okay.
Hey, listen, I haven't sang Gates of Delirium for 40 years. So
I
can't believe what I was saying, you know?
You know, I always wanted to ask you, this is probably a weird question, and I don't think anybody's ever asked you this, and maybe I'm crazy, but I happen to be a fan. Is Gates of Delirium at all, because it's got that, you know, that war thing, is it at all based on Albert Eiler's Bells? You familiar with that?
No.
No.
What it was, basically, around that time, I met two people. One was Vangelis, and the other one was Ilan Mimaroglu. Now, Ilan Mimaroglu had a deal with Atlantic. He lived in New York. He was an electronic composer.
Mm-hmm.
The most bizarre, amazing, crazy, wild. He did it all with sort of woodwinds and clarinets and things, and he had all four tape recorders going at the same time, and all, and he mixed them all together, make unbelievable sound.
Right.
And he wrote a piece called Wings of the Delirious Demon, and I thought, yes, I get it. Music isn't just dun 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 dun. You know, music is all sorts of music, all different kinds. And yeah. Ilan, I don't know if he's still alive, but my gosh, I just loved him. And he loved Yes music, as it happened, and we became friends. So I dedicated that idea of Gates of Delirium to him in my mind. And I didn't write it anywhere, but it was all the idea that sound can actually wake you up and out of a, you know, we need to wake up and dream a better dream. That's right. How I think about life. Wake up, dream a better dream. Wake up, come on, wake up. And so Gates of Delirium was this like crazy wild idea that I actually wrote parts on piano. And thank you, Chris, for letting me do this. But I play them pieces on the piano. Terrible, yeah. I couldn't play the piano. I could play just white notes, which is right. Okay. And but we made that record, and it was a wild piece to do on stage because it was very, very dangerous to me.
Yeah.
Well,
I remember you played the whole thing in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
when it came out,
I know.
And you still think that Soon or To Be Over is a single?
Yeah, Soon. I'm going to be singing Soon. Oh, Soon the light. Pass within and soothe this endless night.
Yeah.
We wait here for you. our reason to be here. Ta-da!
So it's been a few years now since you've been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. When you go to Cleveland, do you go and check out the exhibit?
I did a show there.
Oh, okay.
No, I haven't seen the exhibit, but I saw photographs and it was a bit depressing.
Oh.
Because they centered in on drama, you know.
Oh.
I don't know if you've seen it. It's more about the drama of Yes rather
yeah,
than...
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that, but I've seen the drama cover.
It's a little sad.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'd actually was working with the youth orchestra in Cleveland there, and me and Jane went to see the place,
right.
And they invited me to come and do a little midday show, like a 12 to solo show, you know,
right.
Which I did. I loved doing it, and all my history was there. You know, you walk
right.
around and you see, you know, people that you remember from the beginning of time, you know, musically speaking.
Right.
And you walk around that place. It's amazing place. So I was happy to be inducted into it.
Yeah.
But
somebody else wanted me to ask, and I thought this is an interesting question. What did Geddy Lee say to you after he played at the induction
What's your name
ceremony?
Again? I said, John Anderson. No, he didn't say that. He didn't
no,
say
no,
that.
I know.
No,
I mean,
were you
familiar with, you must have, you were familiar with Rush's music, right?
Yeah, of course. But
yeah. Did he say anything to you after that? Or because that was his like ideal thing was to play with Yes.
No, it was brilliant. I think we just hugged about 10 times. Come here, man. Thank you very much. You're great. Thank you.
that was some night, wasn't it? I remember.
Yeah,
that.
we played damn good.
Yeah.
The worry about doing that kind of thing is you're there at 3 in the afternoon doing a sound check,
right?
And then drinks come and they think, oh wait a minute, I shouldn't have had so many drinks. I got hyperventilated when I went on stage,
right?
And I tried to talk to the audience. I was so stupid because I was hyperventilating, and of course then Rick comes on and tells some dark.
That, right, he did his routine. Yeah. Right.
And I said, perfect. Thank you, Rick.
Yeah, that's what people always say. Yeah, it was great. We, you know, Geddy Lee playing with Yes, and Rick
brilliant.
Wakeman did it part of his show.
You know? Yeah, brilliant.
That was really great. That was really, really great. So, okay, well, listen, I want to thank you. Hopefully, maybe on the other side of the tour, we can do a part two.
Oh yeah, just what I need to be doing. Sorry, Danny.
No problem. I want to thank you. By the way, you've been really animated on this interview, I must say, and I love
yeah.
it. You're
well,
so uplifting,
you know,
and animated.
I just woke up and I've just been working out, and I was watching a movie. Was it Willie Nelson was a cowboy in this movie from?
Oh, okay. There's a few of those, but
30 years ago, really good.
You're a big cowboy fan? American West fan?
Yeah, I used to watch Johnny Mack Brown,
okay.
Way before your time.
Okay.
There was Johnny Mack Brown, and there was Roy Rogers, and he had Trigger, his
yeah.
horse.
Right.
You know, I used to love the movies. I still do. We are a movie.
You should watch some of the, they're on TV now, all the old reruns of Gunsmoke. Which to
oh,
me is
yeah.
the best Western ever. It's on every
oh,
single
yeah.
day on MeTV.
Bonanza and all that.
Bonanza's another
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I haven't got time, Denny. I'm
right.
an artist.
That's right. I forgot. I forgot. But anyway,
see, I've got
listen.
All this work. I've got all this bloody work.
Yeah,
to do.
And I'm
Don't
sure.
Talk to me. I've got.
I'm sure the rest of today. I can't even believe you squeezed out this much time for us because this has been great, and I really appreciate it. And
okay.
I tried to get some of the questions in that people asked me to ask you.
Good.
So I guess we will see you on tour and
okay.
give Jane my regards.
I sure will.
That's my conversation with John Anderson. And I want to thank you for listening and being part of the Rock Podcast. Tell your friends. They can hear us. We're available at all the usual places that you get your podcasts. And we have a video version on YouTube. Of course, it's free, no admission, just a lot of rock and roll memories. You can find us at the website, therockpodcast.com, and on Facebook. You can also send your comments. Let me know what you think. Contact me at hello@therockpodcast.com. I love hearing from you. So till next time, I'm Denny Somach. That's it for now.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.